Good morning. My name is Ava Lake, and thanks so much for listening to Art Focus. I haven't been here in about a month, and it's been good. I went to New York. I went down south, Southern Oregon. It's all been good. I have with me today Sean Healy, who has a beautiful exhibition that's at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. I believe that's elizabethleach.com, yes?
Yes, it is.
Yes, and the show is called Extroverts.
That's right.
Right. Well, let's just talk about the title first. What does that mean?
Well, extroverts to me means it's about my friends that I grew up with. It basically revolves around my personal history of trying to bond with male figures at mm-hmm. an early age. So extroverts is sort of this group of guys that kind of adopted me at a young age. And it's kind of like an homage to them, mm-hmm. honestly.
So these were friends in school or friends in the neighborhood?
Both. I mean, I grew up in a really small town in upstate New York, graduated with 70 people. So we...
In your high school class?
In my high school class.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So we knew everybody. Uh-huh. And so I was raised... My father passed when I was at 10 years old, so... I was kind of adopted by the town. Mm-hmm. I was raised by neighbors, uncles, friends. In particular, this group of four or five guys who just sort of took me under their wing. And you know, I was the introvert. That's the ironic part of this, is that I was by far the quietest of the group. They were they're outgoing guys.
That seems true to me. I don't know you well, but I thought, well, this is interesting, this show. It's addressing, and we're going to get to that in depth, is masculinity, and then the title is Extroverts. But I don't think of you as a big macho dude.
No.
Right?
Yeah. No, unfortunately not.
No. It's good. It's all good. So, I think before we talk about what it means, let's talk about what you see. So I'd like to just start off with just, all right, there's some, is it antlers? There's a drawing. Right. So there's drawings, there's mixed media, there's video, right?
Right. There's drawings using a cigarette butt as the medium of drawing of, there's two drawings of antlers, and then there's one drawing of a laurel wreath. And then there are also two paintings, I'm calling them, of cigarette filters that have coatings of car enamel and resin coating them. So they kind mm-hmm. of, they have this like shiny veneer.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is also a aluminum cutout of a laurel wreath on one wall, a painting on aluminum of a jawbone with a missing tooth, and then in the corner there's a filter, or there's a screen made of cigarette filters that has a video projection of a cigarette that's burning down to the butt,
mm-hmm.
and at the very end the ash falls over, and it's the end of the video.
Okay, so then, but kind of before we get into those particular pieces, talk to us about cigarettes.
Well, it's really symbolic. It's symbolic to me in a couple of different ways. One is directly correlated to my dad, whose nickname was Butts. He would, you know, I've said before, he'd find cigarette butts on the ground and reconstitute these butts into a larger cigarette, and so he'd have a full cigarette to smoke. But
this
also,
was all in New York, upstate New York.
Yeah, okay. Another small town in upstate New York.
Okay, but, so he's recycling other people's cigarettes.
To use.
Was this unusual? Cigarettes weren't that expensive.
You know, but he grew up in such a large Catholic family. Uh-huh. There's 14 siblings in the family. Of course, my grandmother was at home her hands were more than full trying uh-huh. to take care of everybody. So they hadn't. Very little money,
uh-huh.
very, very little money.
Right.
And, you know, they would let the kids loose in the beginning of the day and the kids would come back for dinner. So
right.
they didn't really give them money
uh-huh.
and jobs were, really hard to come by. And, you know, my father at the time was probably, he started smoking at around 8,
yeah.
you know, really young age, this is uh-huh. 1950s. He didn't have the means to get cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't old enough to go into a store to even try to purchase cigarettes. So
yeah.
he just kind of did what he could, you know, to feed the addiction. And also, I think the cigarettes to me are just symbolic of this sort of macho culture, you know?
Well, you know, your dad died when you were young, right?
Right.
Okay, so I'm just going to say here, we talked about this already off the mic, but I'm just going to say my dad died when I was young too. Now, he smoked a lot as well. And I remember us always giving him packs of cartons of cigarettes for Christmas, which was just sick. I mean, the whole, do you find to this day cigarettes are more than just cigarettes to you? Because I think when I see a carton of cigarettes, I mean, I don't know. It does, I do go back to that time.
Sure. Yeah. Well, absolutely. The smell has a really particular effect on me. I'm repelled and repulsed by the smell of cigarette smokes, yet at the same time it brings me back to a really particular place because you know, in the 70s when I was growing up formatively, you smoked in cars, you smoked indoors, you smoked wherever, and so everybody kind of smelled like cigarettes. You didn't really even dawn on you that you were carrying the scent around. But yeah, definitely. And the brand that he smoked, if I see packs of those certain cigarettes in stores, it's definitely triggering a lot of feelings and emotions for me.
Right. Let's just talk a little bit then about the gathering of the art materials, gathering of the cigarettes, the whole thing of making a piece. I mean, I know that, okay, when the paintings, they're not really paintings, they're like a collage where you have all those cigarette butts that are making those with the car enamel and everything.
Right.
So just to describe a little bit for the listener, when you first look at it, you're thinking, oh, well, from far away, it's a painting. But, and it does have paint, but it's, how would you describe it? Do you call it mixed media? What do you call that?
I would call it mixed media. They're very tactile sort of surfaces, mm-hmm. because the cigarette filters themselves, and these are the unwrapped cigarette filters, they're just white sort of kind of pellet looking things, you know, and so they when they come to me, they're not all the same size, so there's definitely, they almost look like a shag carpeting. I think of them as a shag carpeting kind of look, you know? So the idea behind those was they took an incredibly long time to make each one. There's probably close to upwards of 14,000 per 4-foot by 4-foot panel. So I spent 4 months just making the blank screen, you know, this idea of like making the blank page, to then go back in and paint on top of it, which was a really scary leap of faith to do.
Because they were sort of interesting probably without the paint even.
Yeah, huh? I mean, they were. They were really, you know, they were like really nice objects, and I'm not a painter. I've never, you know, I'm not, that's the other part of this that's interesting, is that I used to draw growing up. I think all of us did. You know, that's the first thing that
you do as an artist.
You know, you grab your mark-making material and you draw, and I sort of went away from that for the longest time. I was going to college and the early, very early 90s, postmodernism was a big deal. So, you know, no one was really drawing. Everyone was sort of reconstituting images and, you know, layering. And I was a printmaker and layering of images. So to come back to drawing, that was also a really scary, proposition as well. But one that I found once I started doing it was really fulfilling in the studio.
Well, also it was like you knew what to draw.
Yeah,
in a way, like there's there couldn't have been the huge. I think if you're going back to this idea when you were in school and studying postmodernism, it was different. There's different other ways to follow an idea, to project an idea, or subject matter.
Right.
Whereas this subject matter, I think you were so honed on. You know, you could draw it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You could make the commitment, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
To what is kind of considered an old school move, for lack of a better word.
Right, right. Yeah, getting back to the basics. And, you know, I also think that this was almost an accidental show. I never started this work with the idea that it would be, you know, of course you want it to be shown, but I never was like, okay, I'm going to go in and make a body of work that has to do with this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be, you know, it just kind of organically happened. I just started drawing. And these, I knew what I was going to draw, and these images came out, and then it kind of flowed from there into these other sort of.
So the drawing was first.
The drawings were happening concurrently to the filter pieces. But the filter pieces were, I mean, since they took so long, they were kind of organically sort of happening, you know? I mean, it was at first the process of putting the filters onto the backing. And then as I started drawing the really macho cigarette drawings, you know, it kind of, things started to fall into place. You know, the idea of talking about where creativity comes from is a really tricky topic.
Yes.
Because you don't know, I mean...
You don't always know when you're doing it.
You don't always know. And like ideas are sort of piling up on each other and you're filtering these ideas as you're making things and, you know, you're making the connections as to what's happening.
Well, we haven't really talked about the actual drawing. Like, what is it? What does it look like? So talk to us a little bit about it.
The drawings, if you are just looking at them from afar, you could probably mistake them to be ink, I would say. They're a sepia tone, almost a brown. And then as you get closer, you realize that in the marks themselves, there's little flakes of tobacco that are stuck. And you start noticing that there's smears and sort of like stains. And so the process that I used for these drawings was I would just literally dip a used smoked cigarette butt into water and then just make a mark until that cigarette butt literally disintegrated in my hands, and then pick another one up and make a mark. And so
is the effect is kind of like charcoal?
It looks a little bit like charcoal. It looks a little bit like a cross between charcoal and watercolor. Yeah.
And they are of antlers? What is it? What are we seeing?
They are of antlers. Two that are of antlers. There's one. One is a big ram's horn. The other is sort of a steer's horn. The third is of a laurel wreath that is of, you know, leaves that are sort of in this U-shaped form. All of them have these upswept kind of imagery, very phallic in a way, but also kind of encompassing in another way in terms of these two upswept, almost U-shaped forms that can be, you know, construed as an embracing sort of thing. I think that the drawings themselves attract the viewer because of the sensuousness of the mark as well. But also it works in this push-pull. So as you get closer, you kind of are, it's a little repulsive. You're a little repelled by the actual, like once you realize that these things are made with smoked cigarette butts, you have this sort of, this is gross, but kind of a cool.
Well, do you find that? Maybe just a little bit more about the cigarette. I mean, I'm an ex-smoker. You are too, right? So, and who knows? Maybe for the same reasons we started that we stopped.
Sure, we all did it. I think at one point. Yeah.
Well, especially as artists, or I don't know, we're working class artists. Maybe that's it. You know, like, but there's a lot of people out there that just think like they don't understand at all the attraction.
How do we explain it? You can't defend cigarette smoking. That's a tough sell. But you know, for me, I picked it up in college, and it was a way to sort of take a break, I guess. When I was immersed in so much art, basically, and all these talented people and all these amazing professors. I went to Alfred University in New York and had a great group of peers around me and students. And it was more of just like a sort of 10-minute respite / social thing where you would just step out of the studio and you would talk about something, well, you know, whatever.
You
have a break.
Yeah.
And then I think that just carries over to a lot of...
It was a bonding thing.
Yeah, and I think that you find that too for people who are still smoking and taking cigarette breaks.
Yes.
Same idea.
It's the
same thing.
You're
stepping away from whatever it is you're doing for 5-10 minutes and you're bonding over whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
You're listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Ava Lake, and this is Art Focus. If you want more information about this radio show, you can go to kboo.fm/artfocus, and you can see links to my guests and links to past interviews. I've been doing this show about 5 years, and Joseph Gallivan is also doing the show with me. We're so lucky to have him. Today I have with me Sean Healy, who has an exhibition that's up right now. I highly recommend it at Elizabeth Leach Gallery, and that's elizabethleach.com. The show is called Extroverts, in which you are, Sean, addressing masculinity. And, you know, I found that when I first got the press release about it, I have to tell you, I mean, I made all kinds of emotions in me. And which I've said to you, it's like, I'm over you guys. But on the other hand, it's like, you're not like those guys. And I just was sort of, I know that's very trite what I'm saying, but I'm just going to roll with it here and just be animated for a moment and be real. So I thought this is a chance maybe to talk about a larger thing, because I think it's difficult to talk about what it is to be a guy or a macho guy, just as difficult it is right now what it means to be a female. Hmm. And that conversation is out big right now. So when you decided, as you said, this was an organic thing that happened, how was that going to be an ease? Once you realized what you were taking on, what were your feelings about, like the ease or the unease or...
Oh, well, completely uneasy about the idea of talking about this sort of idea of masculinity. And not only, I mean, this is all coming from a personal sort of standpoint, of course, but yes. Also I'm also talking about this idea of aging as a man and how you are, you know, I now have two sons, trying to set an example of what is right and wrong in this sort of society and day and age, which it's, you know, it's complicated, and they have so much saturation with everything, and trying to really dictate how to be a good person, and this kind of relates back to the concept of the show of me not having any father figures to instruct me in those ways. So I gleaned a lot of things from a lot of different sources. Mm-hmm. And I had to make a lot of decisions, and I made wrong decisions, you know, I mean, and I had to learn from my mistakes, but be aware enough that I knew what those mistakes were, and hopefully I learned from them, and I gained some sort of experience.
Yes.
So all of this kind of ties in, and this idea of talking about masculinity now is difficult. And you know, I'm not here to sort of make the argument that these macho guys, this idea of this machismo is the right idea.
Oh yeah.
And it's also a tongue in cheek. The way I usually make artwork is, there's a little bit of tongue in cheek irony and humor in it as well. Hence the idea of the horns and these phallic. I mean, if you go into the show, there's a lot of sort of phallic symbolism that.
Yes, but you know what's interesting is, as beautiful as the work is, I wouldn't call it heroic in the way like Julian Schnabel is. How about that?
Mm, right.
So, I mean, I think it's your intent is red in the work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, you know, it comes from whom I am, and I'm not Julian Schnabel by any stretch.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, the heroic sort of, like, yeah. I'm a man and I can, you know, however. One thing you were talking about earlier in this conversation, you mentioned, like, you had started off with this kind of very postmodern stance in your school and all of that, and that was true in your work. Yes?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, but this is not the case right now with what you're doing.
No, I've completely,
right?
Yeah.
So talk to us just a little bit about that. I mean, because like that to me is just like amazing.
And freeing.
Yeah.
And really, really freeing in the studio to take this idea of how I've worked for the past. I mean, now it's been, you know, almost 20 years where I've been practicing in the studio, and to free myself from these preconceived ideas of what it is I have done in the past, what it is that's possibly expected.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of break it down, and I had such a great experience in the studio this past year or so, just going in and really enjoying the process of mark making and creating again, and being really involved in the process, whereas sometimes I would find myself completely uninvolved, you know, almost to the point where I wouldn't see the finished product until it was fabricated, you know? And so there's something gratifying by that in a way, but not in the same way where you're, you know, in it every day.
Well, also, I think there's that, I could be wrong about this, but a lot of postmodernism seemed to be this idea of like not making work about yourself and going around and taking the temperature of everybody else to a certain degree. And in this case, you're able to take your own temperature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Right?
I'm with you. I'm agreeing with you for sure. I describe myself as a storyteller a lot in the past, where I would take different groups of people and explore them, you know, explore the dynamics, the power dynamics within that group. But this show for sure is about me, you know. Uh-huh. It's so super personal. And I think because of that, I could not get across what I needed to get across by trusting anyone else to do it.
Yes. Well, you know, one thing you've had the advantage of through all those years of doing your work, and you did a lot of public art work as well, you've learned a lot of different mediums and ways to do them, right? Mm-hmm. You had things fabricated, you fabricated yourself. So one thing that I really got out of this exhibition was your level of skill. Like you had accomplished, you really, it's up a notch all the more. Let's just go back to when you were talking about making those panels. You said, I put all of the cigarette butts on there, but I had to do a leap of faith to get to the paint. How did you, like, did you have to do trial runs on that? Just sort of a technical question. How did you get to that?
There was no way for me to really do a trial run because the process of, I didn't know how the paint was going to lay on the filters. I mean, right. I made little squares.
Okay. You had to a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. So you have to kind of know what you're getting into, whether it's even going to stick, whether it's going to absorb it, whatever, mm-hmm. what have you. But you can't really gauge from a 2-inch by 2-inch square versus a 4-foot by 4-foot panel. It was as close to expressionistic painting as I will probably ever get.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
because you had to pour the paint, you're saying,
or just because it's like there's no you know, frame of reference to go by. I was literally reacting to what the piece wanted.
Right.
You know?
Which was like a candy apple red. Talk to us a little bit about your color choice based on
the
car.
Sure. Well, the color choice is the two pieces are called candy apple and black cherry. And uh-huh. the pieces themselves are in a series of more that I'm going to make called American Muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And so the color choices were deliberate in that they mimicked color schemes from 1970 muscle cars. So...
And, but by the way, did you have your own personal relationship with those cars, or is it just a symbol of your youth?
Just a symbol of my youth. I mean, I never actually owned one. Uh-huh. I was brought to school. My friend had a Mustang that was
nice.
You know, I have fond memories of. But yeah. That's as close as I ever got. But I, you know, being of the age where we would grow up watching, you know, Starsky and Hutch and all these other shows where
right.
they would have muscle cars and beautiful paint jobs. It just really resonates with me, these colors. And so I thought it worked well conceptually with the cigarette filters as well. So I did have a color scheme to go by, and uh-huh. I would base my colors upon that color scheme. But, you know, even in the one panel that's called Black Cherry, it kind of ends at the bottom. It's not fully painted.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just, you know, a process of being in the studio and reacting to what the piece was, you know, what was happening with the piece.
Yeah.
And so I don't generally work that way. I'm not usually so visceral.
Let it go.
And it was uh-huh. really, it's terrifying, but,
right.
you know, awesome at the same time.
Yes. We haven't discussed the video. Can you talk to, I don't normally, I guess I maybe haven't seen video but from you before.
No, first one I've made.
So talk to us about it.
The piece is kind of, it's been a long gestating piece. It's called Smudge. It is a screen made of cigarette filters in the corner of the room with a projection of a cigarette butt at the bottom that's facing straight up, very phallic. And you can kind of see the smoke. You see the smoke billowing. You're really seeing more of the smoke, and then you see this cigarette butt at the bottom that's sticking straight up from the bottom of the panel. And then the ash, the way it was smoked is that the ash doesn't fall off. It just keeps getting larger and uh-huh. larger until at the very end it kind of just like limps over to one side and then drops.
Uh-huh.
So kind of interesting that way. But also, it comes from the idea of smudging a room to get uh-huh. rid of bad energy, but also smudging a room with a cigarette butt. That is kind of like there's this crazy push-pull there as well. So that was Kelly Rauer helped me with a video.
Yeah.
Really close friend of mine. She was great because I don't know video. You know, I'm not.
She does.
And she does.
Yeah.
She certainly does. And so I asked for help. That was more of a collaborative process.
Yeah.
And working with her was great.
How long is the video?
The video itself is...
the time it takes for a cigarette to go
down?
Yeah,
it's about 3 minutes. 3.5 minutes, and then it loops a few times. So it's like three cigarettes in a row. It's about the time, you know, someone would take a massive smoke break
right.
the day.
So I got a couple of things just in the back of my mind here. So I remember you. I mean, I did interview once before, I think a long time ago, at KPSU.
Right.
And it might have been over... public art project, or I'm not really sure, but are you still doing that?
Oh yeah.
Okay. I just want to sort of let the listener know about the other part of it.
Sure.
You.
Yeah. I Joe Thurston and I actually have started a company now. It's been 5 years, I think, could be even longer. It's called Healy Thurston, and we've been working together on public art projects. We have one currently happening in the town of West Lynn for the police department. And we finished a big project at the University of Oregon and their business school. So,
what do you guys do together?
Well, it's great to work with somebody.
Me, just describe one thing you do.
Okay, so the U of O project in the business school, we have grids of 100 4x4x4-inch resin cubes that have origami dollar bills folded into origami shapes.
Nice.
And also different stacks of coin that equal a dollar. So there's $100 in each hallway, and it talks about the value and devaluation of money, and does it become more valuable when you make it into art? And, you know, it sort of talks about market flux and things like that. But they're spaced out in a grid of, you know, in these two stairwells underneath these skylights. So they also have this really beautiful, clean quality to them.
Smart. And it's been good to collaborate?
Yeah, it's been great. Joe's one of the smartest people I know. And so he forces me to think outside of my comfort zone all the time. It's been good.
Yes, because I don't know that I know that he's done public art before. I haven't.
He's done public art before, but we've kind of by collaborating sort
did something
of
something new.
Yeah, try to step it up a little bit and apply for more national type projects.
Very good,
yeah.
Very good. Well, Sean, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. Fun.
Yes. So I've been talking with Sean Healy. He has a show that's up right now. It's up all this month called Extroverts. It's at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. You can go to elizabethleach.com. And just also wanted to reiterate that Joseph Gallivan has been helping me with this show here, Art Focus. He'll be with you next week. My name is Ava Lake. Thanks so much for listening to Art Focus. I'll be talking with you in a couple weeks.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual Evening with Wisdom of the Elders, Friday, June 20th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. A night with Wisdom of the Elders takes place at the Melody Ballroom, 614 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. It includes a salmon dinner and a silent auction, as well as speeches and a cultural arts presentation. Again, that's a night with Wisdom of the Elders, Friday, June 20th at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom in Portland. More information about this event may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Yeah. Monica Beamer.
And I'm Mike Crenshaw. We're KBOO's new co-station managers. We're excited to be a part of the KBOO community. We're starting a new weekly feature on Wednesdays at 5:45 p.m. News from the Boo will give you an inside look into what's happening at KBOO, including upcoming events, station news, special programming, and future goals and plans for the station.
Be sure to tune in this Wednesday and every Wednesday after the KBOO Evening News for News from the Boo, an insider look into your community radio station.
Muy buenas tardes, estás escuchando KBOO Portland. A continuación, un breve corte informativo en español. Estados Unidos ampliará el área del Océano Pacífico cerrada a la pesca y a la exploración de energía. En un mensaje difundido este martes, Obama adelantó que su gobierno considerará de inmediato cómo se puede expandir esta zona protegida. El objetivo es ampliar significativamente el área protegida de las aguas adyacentes a 7 islas y atolones controlados por Estados Unidos y situados en el Pacífico entre Hawái y las Islas Marinas. Además, Obama emitió un memorándum ordenando a las agencias federales competentes, desde el Departamento de Justicia al de Agricultura o la Oficina del Representante Comercial, que desarrollen un programa integral que permita frenar la pesca ilegal, el fraude en el comercio del marisco y pescado y su venta en el mercado global.